House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Tuesday, May 12th, 2015. First item on the agenda is Senate Joint Resolution 4A.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Senate Joint Resolution 4 came to us at the request of former Secretary of State, now Governor Kate Brown. We have no revenue impact, and we do have a fiscal statement issued on this bill that you have before you. This bill was unanimously passed by the Senate Judiciary, and then it went to the Rules Committee, where they did some amending that we'll talk about, and it then is going back to Rules after this. And so there is no mandatory retirement age for judges at the federal level, but at least at the state level, at least 33 states plus the District of Columbia currently have mandatory retirement ages for judges. But that number is in flux, as mandatory retirement has been a topic of several initiatives, as well as court cases throughout the nation with really mixed results. So Oregon's judicial retirement requirement is contained in Section 1A, Article 7 of the Oregon Constitution, and it mandates that a judge of any court retire at the end of the calendar year in which he reaches the age of 75. Thank you. This section also states that the Legislative Assembly or the people may, by law, fix a lesser age for mandatory retirement, not to be earlier than the end of the calendar year in which the judge attains the age of 70 years. Oregon's mandatory retirement age was most recently challenged in a case that we will hear about that involved Attorney Agnes Peterson in 2014. So now let's talk about the amendment. There was some discussion in the Rules Committee that they didn't really like the wording of the resolution as is because it contained a negative and said that the people may not fix an age. So there was a lot of work done, a lot of conversation done with legislative counsel just to change it so it didn't have that negative component, because this will be submitted to the people for vote. So it is ready to move today.
Thank you. Call Ms. Peterson, Maurice Cassidy, and Rochelle Altman. Please seat, and then you can go in any order. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Agnes Peterson, and I practice in St. Helens, Oregon. I've been there for 55 years.
Yes, you have. I remember you.
I'm sorry?
I remember you from when I used to work out there in the state police.
Do you want me to proceed?
You can go ahead and start. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. First, let me say that I started practicing in St. Helens, Oregon, the same year that Donald Kelber started practicing in St. Helens, Oregon. And he has submitted a letter, which I brought today. He could not appear today, so he apologizes for that. I went by his house this morning and got the copies of the information that is before you. Unless you want me to, you've got it in writing. I'm not going to read it.
That's fine.
But he wanted me to tell you two things. He and his wife both talked to me this morning and said, first, he said that senior judges who are over 75 years work all the time at the request and consent of the Chief Justice. And the only people who are restricted from working past 75 are those people who are holding an elective office and then are forced to retire. Secondly, he wanted me to tell you, as did his wife, that he saw on TV last night that a nurse who is in her 90s had a birthday party, and she is working full shifts at her profession. So there must not be this mandatory restriction on nurses who are competent, capable, and willing to work. So since you have her letter, his letter, in lieu of his appearance, I'm not going to go further with that. Some of you may know Judge Kelber, and he's an able and wonderful jurist. And if it were not for the fact that he is now working full-time as a caregiver, and a wonderful one, for his wife, he probably would be on the bench 24/7. Now, the second thing I want to talk about is, as counsel brought out, the administrator brought out, at the federal level, there is no such restriction. And let's talk about the marvelous people who are on the bench at the federal level who are working well past 75 and able to do it. I mentioned Justice Ginsburg in this document that I submitted, and I'm not going to read it to you either. You can read it if you want to or not read it. It's entirely up to the committee. But it sets forth all the reasons I believe that this law should be changed. After practicing 55 years, I have some observations to make to you about lawyers and judges. And it's a sad comment, but they never stick up for themselves. So here I am today sticking up for judges, and I think they are entitled to be stuck up for two reasons. Number one, somebody ought to stick up for them. But number two, this affects a very, very small percentage of your population. But anytime there is discrimination against anyone, no matter how small the population, it should be eliminated, because any discrimination that is allowed anywhere against anyone affects us all, because each of us may be next. Then I pulled out some information about Judge Goodwin, Ted Goodwin, they call him. I've known him ever since I started practicing law, and I've known him well, and I consider him one of the finest men and one of the finest human beings I have ever known. He's 91 years old, and I called someone else who is from the state of Illinois a poster child for this law change, but I think Justice Goodwin is a local, more well-known justice. The last time I saw him was a week ago Monday. I went to the Oregon Historical Society, where he was being honored by the fact that someone else has written a book about him, and it'll be available, but they had all sold out by the time I ordered mine. And this is just a summary of his life and what he's doing now. I visited with him, and he told me a week ago Monday that not only is he working, and it sounded to me like pretty much full time, but he also is running a sheep ranch over by Sisters, Oregon. So that's what's going on with all these so-called old folks. Now, what about me? What about me? This law doesn't have anything to do with me. I was so offended when I found out this was in the Constitution. I, number one, signed up to run. I knew that this existed before I filed. I filed anyway, and then I challenged the law, and then I ran on a write-in campaign anyway. Folks, the sun has fairly set for me. The likelihood of me running again is not great, because we've got three judges who have been elected to Columbia County. I was born and raised there, go back generations. I don't intend to move in order to become a judge, but I wanted this challenged. And thank God for Kate Brown, because I'm unimportant in the total picture of the world, but she's important in the picture of the world, and she recognized this as being something that should be changed. So the gracious governor you have put this in as a bill while she was still Secretary of State. Thank you for your attention. If you have any questions about me or what I intend to do next, ask them. But don't ask me my age, because a lady never tells her age, and I'm not telling you.
I was told a lady that would tell her age would lie about other things as well.
Yes.
Good one. Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Rochelle Altman. I serve as legislative director in the Secretary of State's office. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of SJR 4. This resolution amends Article 7, Section 1A of the Constitution to repeal age-based mandatory retirement for judges. Specifically, SJR 4 repeals a provision of the Constitution that requires retirement of judges at the end of the calendar year at which they turn 75 years old. SJR 4 also amends Section 1A to delete other references in that constitutional section to age-based mandatory retirement for judges. These changes that we propose will benefit both sitting judges and future judges at the time that SJR 4 would take effect. Currently, Oregon law places no other mandatory age-based retirement requirements on any holders of public offices, such as legislators, other than judges. So judges are the sole public office holder that is discriminated against based on age. In addition,
As Ms. Peterson mentioned, there are no federal age-based retirement requirements for judges. Four of the nine sitting judges on the U.S. Supreme Court are currently older than 75 years of age. Also of note, 17 states have no constitutional or statutory mandatory retirement requirements for judges, and two additional states, they have constitutional requirements on the books for judges, but they are not enforced. I would also like to highlight that ORS 1.310 currently does provide that a judge's inability to perform judicial duties may be the basis for mandatory retirement of judges, and that provision lays out in detail a process under which judges could be forced to retire if appropriate, if they are not able to fulfill their judicial duties. That provision that's on the books, it would remain consistent with the Constitution if SJR 4 became law. So Oregon has repeatedly seen judges forced to retire at age 75, and in some cases, such as Ms. Peterson's, they have been barred from even running for a judicial office. They've been barred from serving even when their years of service would have allowed them and their abilities would still allow them to make valuable contributions as judges in our state. For this reason, Secretary Atkins believes that age-based mandatory retirement for judges is an unfair anachronism, and she urges your support of SJR 4. And with that, thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of this resolution, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Members of the committee, my name is Maurice Cassidy. I'm an attorney out in Columbia County. I've been there somewhat less time than Ms. Peterson. I've been out there less than half a year, so by quite a factor. I will just say that I have submitted written testimony. Since the time that the language went into the Constitution that was described to us briefly by the committee administrator, Oregon has made great strides in removing many vestiges of racial prejudice, gender prejudice, sexual orientation prejudice, disability prejudice, and I'm asking that we chip away at age prejudice. You have this ramp over here that's ADA compliant. I noticed all of you used it. It is something that both the strong and the able, the disabled, the infirmed, the enfeebled, and the injured all use. And it serves us all quite well, as do the judges that we have sitting. If their age becomes a problem for them, most of them have the dignity to retire on their own. There are, as we've just heard, methods to remove people that are unable to perform. And as they are elected officials, it is very common for them to be run against by other people that see them as no longer able to function in the role that they're asked to serve. So I'm asking you to remove this language from the Constitution, or help the citizenry do that, and help defray that number of 33 down to 32 states that have this age bias in their laws. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for the panel?
May I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Oregon always goes around saying how proud it is to be first, okay? I've done some research on the states that have this crazy prohibition, and this is the first state, I think, where the legislature is on top of it and where it will likely get through. Other states have tried to do it at the legislative place and never got anywhere. And I'm worried about the session ending without this getting passed. So I hope you fast roll it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony today.
Thank you for having us here.
We're in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 4 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and to the Rules Committee by prior reference.
President Williamson moves Senate Joint Resolution 4A to the floor with the due pass with prior reference to the Rules Committee. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none,
I have to disqualify myself on the.
We just won't pay any attention to you. We need your vote today, so we'll count you this time. So ordered. Thank you. Bill passes. Down to rules. Next item on the agenda is Senate Bill 234. Open a public hearing.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 234 comes to us from the Governor's Office for the Department of Corrections. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this bill. It passed the Human Services and Early Childhood Committee unanimously, and it passed the House floor 29-1 legislator excused. We have no amendments before us today. So ORS 421.340 addresses rules for the exchange of products among institutions, and it's really known to be very outdated. That statute was implemented when a lot of agencies were all formed under the Department of Human Services. The Department of Corrections didn't even exist, as a matter of fact. So the statute is widely known to be outdated, as I mentioned, and at present, the DOC follows the Department of Administrative Services rules addressing purchases of goods from OCE, and these rules are generally applicable to DOC and other agencies. So Senate Bill 234 repeals that section, ORS 421.340, declaring it an emergency and is effective on passage. And I should just mention that that section requires that the Department of Corrections and certain state agencies jointly and annually promulgate rules for purchasing products manufactured by Oregon Corrections Enterprises. The bill is ready to move today.
Right, Ms. Craig.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Craig. I'm here representing the Oregon Department of Corrections and to testify in support of Senate Bill 234 and answer any questions you may have. As you heard, Senate Bill 234 repeals an outdated and unnecessary statute that was originally adopted at a time before the creation of DOC. It was actually adopted in 1935. At that time, state institutions for adult inmates, juvenile offenders, the mentally ill, and the developmentally disabled were all organized within the Department of Human Services under various divisions. Those institutions were few, and those institutions were managed much more independently by superintendents. Essentially, the statute states that these institutions shall jointly annually promulgate rules to authorize the purchase of products to be manufactured by OCE, or Oregon Corrections Enterprises. OCE is the prison industry's arm of the Department of Corrections. We have since evolved, and it is no longer necessary or useful for the various agencies to jointly annually promulgate rules. So Senate Bill 234 essentially will repeal this language, and we will continue to use DAS purchasing rules. And so I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions?
So have you actually been following this statute? Have there actually been joint promulgation of rules for the last 80 years?
Vice Chair Williamson and Rep. Barton, this actually came to our attention through a lawsuit from an inmate. We were successful in getting that dismissed, but we need to repeal the language so that we are in compliance, essentially.
Good answer.
Excellent. No questions? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing. Oh, geez. That doesn't work. And I'm going to open a work session.
Oh.
No, he has to make a motion. One, two, three,
four. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 234 to the fourth and do pass.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 234 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? So move.
Carrier.
Representative Williamson, carry.
Another party line.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 405A.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 405A comes to us at the request of the Senate Interim Committee on Judiciary for the Oregon Law Commission. We have no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued on this bill. The bill unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it passed the Senate 29-1 member excused. We have no amendments before us today either. So previous legislative work done with respect to juvenile records created some unintended consequences that disallowed the Oregon Youth Authority from disclosing information regarding youth within their jurisdiction. And related problems include serious complications anytime OIA has the need to disclose juvenile records and significant inefficiencies and workarounds that are being used to temporarily fill this gap. So Senate Bill 405A authorizes OIA to disclose the same information about youth within their jurisdiction as the juvenile courts and county juvenile department can disclose. The bill also clarifies that nothing in the current law prohibits juvenile court from providing certain information to the appropriate child support program administrator. Additionally, Senate Bill 405A proposes a one-year extension to the operative date of statutory provisions regarding providing access to juvenile court records to other persons not specifically provided access by statute. We'll hear more about that in testimony, I'm sure. The bill declares an emergency and is effective on passage, and it is ready to move today.
Thank you. Philip Schradl and Christine Kurt, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Philip Schradl. I'm interim deputy director of the Oregon Law Commission. And committee administrator Ms. Hansel did a fine job of summarizing most of the provisions of the bill, so I really won't go repeating through that. One reason for the length of this bill is there are two sections in this bill that address both current operative statute and statutes that go into effect in September of 2015. And I think I'll actually focus my comments there. The operative date for certain provisions in the statutes were enacted at that time, back in 2013, and then extended in 2014 to September 2015 because of pending litigation that was ongoing. And the statutory provisions at issue are to talk about when the courts, juvenile courts, can disclose records and provide access to records. The litigation addressed those very provisions, and that litigation concluded only in December of 2014. We reconvened the work group of the Oregon Law Commission to see if we could address those provisions very quickly. There was rather robust discussion in the work group. The Judicial Department was proposing provisions that would provide access basically upon the best interest of the child. A number of procedural issues kind of arose about whether the provision should be, you know, applicable the same whether during the pendency of adjudication or after the juvenile court had concluded adjudication, what processes there might be that put in place. That's the reason that we're coming back before the Legislative Assembly to ask for an additional 1 year of extension of time for those provisions to go to September 15 of 2016, and we will reconvene the Oregon Law Commission work group and address those concerns and be bringing back to the next legislative session provisions that will provide for consistency of those provisions across the state so that juvenile courts will have, you know, consistent application of that and have a chance to develop the appropriate guidelines and procedures to have those in place. Ms. Hansel very appropriately described the two other minor modifications. Those minor modifications are simply to provide OIA the same statutory authority as the juvenile courts have to disclose access to records or information about records that are in their provision for juveniles who are within their jurisdiction. And the provisions already applicable to the juvenile courts have been interpreted to prohibit the courts from providing access to child support program administrators around the state. And that has the unfortunate aspect of when wardships are terminated or parental rights have been terminated and that information can't be provided to the child support program administrator, child support obligations are enforced beyond the date that they're appropriately done. So with those are the minor modifications, but I'm certainly happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Christine Kirk, and I am the public affairs manager for the Oregon Youth Authority. I just wanted to state that the Oregon Youth Authority is very much in support of this bill and share our appreciation for the Oregon Law Commission for having a forum to focus on juvenile court records and for us to have a way to vet the issues that we were seeing while unintended in being able to release records or acknowledge that we have OIA youth in our custody and to vet that amongst our peers and be able to bring back a recommendation. And so I hope you do support this bill, and we look forward to having some consistency that we can implement in policy about what records we can and cannot release. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, anybody? Okay, we'll move. Thank you very much. Move to a work session on Senate Bill 405A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 405A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 405A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Carrier? I'll carry it. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 604A.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Senate Bill 604A is sponsored by the Committee on Judiciary. We have no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact on this bill. It unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary and the Senate floor, and we have no amendments before us today. So I'm going to very briefly summarize this because we have Kate Richardson here. This is a very technical bill, but it's really very simple. So there was, in 2014, the federal government passed the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, and the act amended Section 466 sub F of the Social Security Act. It then requires that all states enact the 2008 Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, which was officially adopted by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. So the reason why this is important is because there are federal money on the table that if all states do not, if a state does not adopt the 2008 Uniform Family Support Act amendments, we could lose federal money that supports our child support programs. Also, all states must ratify, adopt these amendments to ratify the Hague Convention. So Senate Bill 604A incorporates the 2008 USA amendments into Oregon law, and it also provides clarification to both the USA amendments as they apply in Oregon as well as to existing law. The bill is ready to move.
Okay, thank you. Lane Charity, Kate Richardson, and Michael Ritchie.
So come on, Council, did you explain what the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act is?
Do
you guys want it? Are they going?
Yeah, they know.
Okay. Was it in there?
Yeah,
I just missed it. Okay.
Page 34.
For the win.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, pleasure to be with you. My name is Lane Shetterly, an attorney in Dallas. I'm here today as a commissioner from Oregon to the Uniform Law Commission, or the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. That's why they went to the shorter name, Uniform Law Commission. This bill is before you today, as counsel said, product of 2008 of the Uniform Law Commission, which was intended to update our earlier version of UIFSA, the Interstate Family Support Act, to incorporate amendments made by the Hague Convention to the International Treaty. So why are we doing it in 2015 if this was all done in 2008? And that is because it took Congress that long to ratify the changes to the Hague Convention. And this is a process of interesting process of what's called cooperative federalism, in that where Congress has ratified the treaty rather than just adopting federal legislation that implements it. Since this is a family law area which devolves to the states traditionally, Congress has deferred to the states to actually adopt and enact UIFSA, and by that will implement the treaty here in the United States. You'll note that if you've read it carefully, as I'm sure Representative Barton has, all of you, there are some language issues in the act that are different than what you typically see in your Oregon LC adopted statute or bill. And the reason for that is language in this act, UIFSA, is intended to track very precisely to the Hague Convention. And so there are formulas of language and words that you probably wouldn't see in otherwise in statute that are used in this act. I would urge you to curb your enthusiasm for amendment to harmonize this with Oregon drafting tradition. It is important that the language stay consistent with the treaty. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to my former legislative aide and invite her to enlighten you further on the specifics of the act.
That was back in the 90s. For the record, Kate Cooper Richardson, Director of the Oregon Child Support Program and the Administrator of the Division of Child Support at the Department of Justice. As Lane indicated, this is Congress has put this on all of the state 40 or this Title 40 of the Social Security Act, all those child support programs in the states to enact this legislation in this legislative session. The Uniform Interstate Family Support Act has been around for quite some time. Oregon has the 1996 version of that Uniform Act, and some states have 2001 version, and we're all going to now have the 2008 version. What the Uniform Act does is help ease the enforcement of child support across state borders so that there is uniform language and provisions, so that, because of course most folks don't stay in the same, or many folks don't stay in the same state. So this helps to ease the interactions we have when we're enforcing child support orders for or modifying child support orders from other states, or when they are with ours, when they are other states are doing that with our programs as well. It also, though, is international or intergovernmental is probably the better word, because we also have interactions with the tribes, their child support programs as well. So this will not only benefit us with all the signatories to the international treaty, but it will also help us be more uniform and efficient across our state lines within the United States as well. You have fairly lengthy and detailed written testimony from me. And really what it will do is make things better for our kids and families, and easier to get money to families much more quickly, including on international cases. In Oregon, our program has fewer than 200 international cases, although we expect that that will probably be going up a little bit. It'll make the uniform forms and even the website that the Hague Convention maintains helps us all to understand what processes, what documentation we need to be sending to the different countries. So I will open for questions here, because if they're technical, there's 47 pages to wade through, and I'll hand it over to Mike Ritchie, who would answer all the technical questions as general counsel for the program. Or we could just stop right now.
Right. Technical questions.
No, what happens if we do not pass it? Not that I think it, I assume there's a federal cooperative federalism. That usually means we lose money if we don't pass it. Yeah.
Chair Barkley, members of the committee, why yes. And we have an object lesson. If you have read recently of course you turn to the child support page of your local newspaper, Idaho's legislature decided to, at the last minute, truly at the last minute, failed to enact this legislation. Within, I think, about 36 hours, the federal commissioner of the Office of Child Support Enforcement and Health and Human Services of the department issued a letter to the state indicating that they would, if they did not get that rectified within, I think it was 30 days, or did they give them 60, that they would be withdrawing their federal funds, which are tens and tens of millions. We have, for every dollar that the state legislature puts in, the feds put in $2 each. We return money to the states, and we pass through 93% of the funds we collect to the families. So let's just say that there's a special session May 18th in Idaho.
So if I follow up, sure. This is the one, it made national news, where they somehow got linked to Sharia law to some, and they didn't act, and it was...
Yeah. Chair Barker, Representative Barton, why yes, that would be the bill. At no signatories to the convention employ Sharia, there was also an issue of federalism as well, in that, you know, there are some states, mainly in the West, that don't take kindly sometimes to the federal offices or Congress telling us exactly what to do. The other thing that is kind of notable, it's a little different than usual, is that in a uniform law, you often get to adapt it more. But as Lean indicated, this had to be adopted verbatim. And that's to ensure for the international purposes. There was a little bit of wiggle room on stylistic, but not much. So I think there was a little bristling going on there. I don't foresee that problem in this state. Should I, Representative Barton?
Well, I don't know if you've met Chair Barker yet.
Thank you very much.
Very well. Thank you.
Ms. Barber here in open work session on Senate Bill 604A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 604A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We'll put its amendments to it.
Yeah, it was amended.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 604A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
So is 604A, that does imply an amendment on that?
So there was some clarifying, Chair Barker, members of the committee. It was amended just to clean up some language.
That's what we couldn't do.
But so stylistically, there were small changes that could be made. And I'm getting the thumbs up from
It was okayed by Chicago, the Uniform Law Commission.
Okay by D.C.
Is that on testimony right there?
You're going to need to do a roll call.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
You're going to vote no.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenlee?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Excused.
Representative Leininger?
Excused.
Representative Post?
No.
Representative Springer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good lawyer from the East.
Mr. Chair, could I make a motion?
Sure.
Could we suspend the rules and allow Representative Olson to vote on SJR 4A, Senate Bill 234, and Senate Bill 405A, if you don't need separate motions on those?
We'll suspend rules. Go ahead. Representative Olson?
Yes on all four. Three of them.
If you're recording as a yes vote. Thank you. Any further business to come before the committee?
Thank you kindly.
We are adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Kindly.
We are adjourned. Thank you, committee.